All right, let's dive into something that, well, it might feel a bit daunting, especially if you're a business owner or maybe you handle HR for your company. We're talking about that company 401k plan, the one you offer. It's a great benefit, right, for your employees.
Absolutely. It's often key for attracting and retaining talent.
But have you ever really stopped to think, do I actually understand my personal liability here? Am I sure we're not, overpaying somewhere?
Or what if there's just a small mistake, an oversight, maybe a hidden fee you didn't even know about?
Exactly. Could that actually snowball into massive fines or penalties? Even, heaven forbid, a lawsuit?
Those are the questions that, they can absolutely keep people up at night because the regulations, they are complex.
Yeah.
And frankly, the stakes are just incredibly high.
They really are. And that's exactly why we're doing this deep dive today. We're going to unpack the insights from this really detailed report.
And it's interesting, the author isn't some regulator or attorney necessarily.
No, it's a fellow business owner, someone who actually lived this, thought they had everything covered, had outside help even.
And then discovered they were exposed to some pretty significant unexpected risks within their own company's 401k plan.
It just hits different coming from that perspective, doesn't it?
It really does. It grounds all these potential risks in a real-world scenario, something I think a lot of our listeners can probably relate to.
Totally. So our mission today, it's pretty simple, really. We want to take this report, pull out the most critical takeaways.
And help you balance those very real risks and potential dangers of managing a 401k.
Against the surprising benefits and actually some quite straightforward actions you can take, to protect yourself, your team, your whole business.
We're basically going to cut through some of that complexity and help you see what's most important in all this material.
Okay, so where do we start? I think the most fundamental point this report really hammers home, something many business owners might just completely overlook.
Yeah, it's foundational. The moment you decide to offer a qualified retirement plan, like a 401k, boom, you automatically step into the role of a fiduciary.
And a fiduciary, that's not just some, corporate buzzword.
Yeah.
Being a fiduciary under ERISA, that's the Employee Retirement Income Security Act, it means you have serious legal obligations.
Sirius is right. Your primary duty, your main job, is to act solely in the best interest of the plan participants. That means your employees, their financial well-being in the plan comes first.
And this report, it breaks that big responsibility down into two main categories, right?
Exactly. First, you've got your administrative fiduciary duties. That's the day-to-day operational stuff, making sure contributions are processed correctly and, crucially, on time, handling participant requests, filing the necessary forms with the government.
Okay, the nuts and bolts, and the second part.
That's the investment fiduciary responsibility. This is all about overseeing the actual investment options you offer in the plan.
So, are the costs reasonable? Are the funds performing okay compared to, similar options out there? Are you actually reviewing them periodically?
Precisely. And what this report makes, well, alarmingly clear, are the potential consequences if you drop the ball on these duties.
And we're not talking small stuff here.
No, we're talking about legal responsibility that can come with significant financial penalties. And not just for the company, potentially for you personally.
Wow. Personally.
Yes. Plus, you've got possible fines from regulators like the Department of Labor. And, okay, in certain really severe cases, things involving fraud or gross negligence, there's even the potential for criminal charges.
Okay, that's where this gets really eye-opening. And honestly, it's a bit unsettling. This isn't just theoretical risk anymore, is it?
Not at all. The report points to a definite trend. We're seeing increasing enforcement actions from the DOL, and maybe more worryingly for many, a rise in civil lawsuits.
Lawsuits. Okay, do we have any numbers on that?
We do. The DOL's enforcement arm, it's called the Employee Benefits Security Administration, or EBSA. In their 2023 fiscal year alone, they recovered a staggering $1.435 billion. Billion with a B.
$1.4 billion recovered for who?
Back into plans or directly to participants, out of about 730 civil investigations they closed, 505 of them, that's nearly 70%, resulted in some kind of monetary recovery.
That's a huge percentage. What kind of issues are they finding?
It's often things we've touched on, making sure contributions are deposited on time, verifying plan assets are valued correctly, ensuring fees are reasonable, addressing conflicts of interest, basic blocking and tackling, but critical.
And they pursue criminal cases too.
They do. They closed almost 200 criminal investigations in 2023, which led to 60 indictments. So, yeah, it's serious business.
Now, the report mentions some massive settlements, household names, UnitedHealth, GE, Boeing, Verizon. You hear those big numbers, tens of millions, even over 100 million.
Right. And you might think, okay, that's the Fortune 500 crowd. That's not my small or mid-sized business.
But that's not the whole story, is it?
No, and this is a critical insight the author pulls out, actually quoting an attorney who specializes in this area. There's a growing trend now of plaintiff's attorneys targeting smaller plans.
Really? Smaller plans? Why would they do that?
Yeah.
Seems counterintuitive.
Well, it's actually quite strategic. Think about it. For a smaller business, the sheer cost of defending against one of these lawsuits, even if the claim itself is maybe questionable, that cost can easily run into six figures.
Okay, yeah, legal fees add up fast.
Exactly. So the cost of defense can often exceed what they might settle for. This creates pressure on smaller companies to settle quickly, even for smaller claims, just to make it go away. It makes them, unfortunately, attractive targets.
Wow. So it's not just about the merits. Sometimes it's about who can afford the fight. The report also mentioned a big jump in 401k litigation recently.
Yeah, up 35% just this year, according to the report. And it blames several factors. The industry's sort of historical lack of transparency, potential conflicts of interest baked into how some plans are sold.
The general complexity of it all.
And those common issues we keep coming back to. Excessive fees, underperforming investments hidden in the lineup. It all creates this environment where lawsuits can thrive.
It's a real vulnerability.
Okay.
Shifting gears slightly, but related to personal liability. One of the most concrete, maybe surprising points in the report comes down to something pretty routine.
Let me guess. The Form 5500 signature.
You got it. That signature on the Form 5500. Something a busy owner or HR manager might just sign off on, assuming the TPA or record keeper handled it correctly.
Yeah, this is such an important point. That Form 5500, it's that big annual report the plan has to file with the Department of Labor and the IRS. It's got all the details, financials, investments, how the plan operates. It's a key compliance document.
Right. And the report basically says,
all right,
go look at your company's 5500 right now. See whose name is actually signed on that line. It's usually the designated plan administrator. That could be the CEO, an HR manager, maybe someone else specifically named as a fiduciary.
And the crucial part is what happens when you or someone in your company puts their signature there. You are officially attesting, under penalty of perjury, that everything in that complex form is accurate and complete.
Penalty of perjury. That sounds serious.
It is. The report really emphasizes this, that single signature means you retain tremendous fiduciary responsibility and potential liability, even if you hired someone else to prepare the form.
So basically, you're on the hook for its accuracy, even if you didn't fill out every single box yourself. That's a heavyweight.
It really is. And the report lists out the key fiduciary duties that the signer explicitly takes on. Things like the duty of care, acting prudently, like a knowledgeable person would, the duty of loyalty, acting only in the interests of the participants.
What else?
Ensuring compliance with all the ERISA rules, prudent management of the whole plan, monitoring the service providers you've hired, you can't just hire and forget, disclosure obligations to your employees, document maintenance, risk management. It's a long list.
Okay, so knowing all that, knowing the weight of that signature, what are some of the most common tripwires? What are the mistakes the report sees happening over and over that can lead to trouble or get you flagged?
Yeah, the report lists several common red flags. Things like needing corrective distributions because the plan failed its annual compliance tests. That can signal issues with plan design or maybe how it's being administered.
Okay, what else?
Having a high percentage of retirees still sitting in the plan. Now that might sound okay, but you're still the fiduciary for those accounts, and sometimes their presence can inadvertently drive up costs for your active employees. It needs managing.
And one that seems basic, but I hear it's common, deposit timing failures.
Oh, yeah. Not getting those employee deferrals and any employer match into the plan accounts fast enough. The DOL has very specific deadlines, usually tied to payroll. Missing them is a clear fiduciary breach. Very easy to track. Very easy to get caught.
Okay, what about the investment side?
Two big ones there. Offering high-cost funds when there are clearly lower-cost comparable alternatives available. And letting poor-performing funds just linger in the plan lineup year after year without review or replacement.
Because that directly hits employees' retirement savings, right?
Directly. Yeah. And overseeing that is a core investment fiduciary duty. Then there's mismanagement of forfeitures.
Forfeitures. That's the money left behind by employees who leave before they're fully vested in the employer contributions.
Exactly. There are specific rules about how that money can be used, usually to reduce plan expenses or offset future employer contributions. Using it incorrectly, maybe to benefit the company improperly, That's another breach.
And I guess tying back to the signature.
Right. Inaccurate data on the Form 5500 itself, or just failure to timely or accurately file the form and related documents. These are fundamental compliance failures.
Wow. Okay. So you can see how even if you hire help, an administrator or an advisor, it would be pretty easy for one of these things to slip through the cracks. And suddenly you, as the person who signed that form, are exposed.
Absolutely. Which really highlights the complexity of trying to delegate these duties effectively. And that's the next big area the report tackles.
Right. Because many employers hire vendors, you know, TPAs, payroll companies, investment advisors, and they assume they're handing off the fiduciary burden.
But the report makes it clear it's often not that simple. It can be incredibly confusing to figure out which specific responsibilities you've actually managed to offload versus what duties and what liabilities still rest squarely on your shoulders.
This is where understanding those different fiduciary code sections comes in, isn't it? The report breaks down 316, 321, 338, and 402A.
Exactly. Let's quickly walk through what each one typically does, and more importantly, what responsibility usually remains with you, the employer, according to this report's definitions.
Okay, start with 316, fiduciary.
Okay, the 316 is generally your plan administrator. Their role is typically focused on handling those day-to-day administrative operations we talked about. Processing contributions, managing distributions, handling participant communications, maybe preparing the 5500 for signature.
So they handle the admin. But the report flags a critical nuance here.
A very critical one. First, not all 316s agree to take on all administrative duties. You have to check the service agreement. And second, even if they prepare the Form 5500, if you or someone else at your company is the one signing it, you still hold significant liability for its accuracy. They might do the work, but your signature makes you accountable.
Got it. Okay, next up, 321, fiduciary.
This is typically an investment advisor. Their role is to provide advice and recommendations on the plan's investment options. They help you understand your duties, evaluate funds, but, and this is key, they do not have the authority to make the final decisions on which funds go into or come out of the plan.
Right. And the big takeaway for the employer with a 321 is?
You are co-fiduciaries when it comes to investments. You share the responsibility and therefore you share the liability. You still hold the ultimate decision-making power and the duty to monitor the costs, the performance, and make changes when necessary. The 321 advises, you decide.
Okay, co-fiduciaries. That means shared risk. Now, how about the 338 fiduciary?
This is different. A 338 is an investment manager. Unlike the 321 advisor, a 338 does have full discretionary authority over the plan's investments. They can select, monitor, and replace funds without needing the employer's specific approval for each change.
Okay. So with a 338, you're actually transferring that core investment management responsibility and liability.
Correct. The report says they assume full fiduciary responsibility specifically for the investment decisions. Now, you, the employer, still have a duty to prudently select that 338 provider in the first place and monitor them, but the day-to-day fund selection and monitoring liability is off your plate.
That sounds like a significant offloading of risk.
Oh.
Okay, finally, the 402A fiduciary.
The 402A is defined in ERISA as the named fiduciary for the entire plan. They're ultimately accountable for all aspects, both the administration and the investment oversight. Think of them as the overarching responsible party.
And how does the report position the 402A in terms of liability transfer?
It presents the 402A as the entity that ideally bears the full fiduciary responsibility for the plan as a whole. While they can delegate specific tasks, maybe to a 316 for admin or a 338 for investments, the 402A remains responsible for monitoring those they delegate to. The goal, as presented in the report, is for the 402A to essentially step into the shoes of the employer and take on that complete fiduciary duty ERISA initially imposes.
Okay, let's quickly recap the key difference then.
Sure. 316 handles admin, but the level of responsibility taken can vary, and crucially, they often don't sign the 5500, leaving liability with you. 321 gives investment advice, but you're a co-fiduciary, sharing liability. 338 manages investments with discretion, taking full investment liability. And 402A is the named fiduciary for the whole plan, ideally taking full responsibility for both admin and investments.
Understanding which of those, if any, you currently have seems absolutely critical to knowing where your risks lie.
Absolutely essential.
Okay, so we've definitely painted a picture of the potential minefields of risks, the confusing roles. It could feel pretty overwhelming.
It could, but this is where the report shifts gears and starts offering a clearer path forward, and it highlights some significant potential benefits to taking action.
And importantly, it suggests that addressing these issues doesn't necessarily mean you have to blow up your entire current setup, right?
Exactly. The author's own experience, which drove the report, showed that fixing these fundamental problems didn't require them to immediately change their record keeper or other providers they were happy with. The process itself can actually be simpler than you might imagine.
That's good news. And beyond just mitigating that scary personal liability, the report talks about another huge potential benefit.
Cost savings. Significant cost savings. The author mentioned seeing over a 30% reduction in their annual plan costs once they address these fiduciary and fee issues.
30% annually. Just think what that could mean. For the company's bottom line, sure, but also think about what lower fees mean for your employees' retirement savings compounding over decades.
It's a massive difference over the long term. So, okay, how do you actually start down this path? The report lays out three actions to immediately take. Practical steps.
All right, let's hear them. Action number one.
Identify your administrative fiduciary role. Basically, pick up the phone or email whoever handles your plan administration, your TPA or record keeper maybe. Ask them point blank. Are you acting as a 402A listed trustee or are you a 316 fiduciary for our plan?
And then the critical follow-up question.
Who signs this Form 5500? Is it them or is it someone in your company? This is non-negotiable information you need.
Okay, what else for action one?
Ask for a copy of their service agreement. You need to read it or have someone knowledgeable read it to understand exactly which administrative tasks they handle and, just as importantly, which tasks remain your responsibility.
Get clarity.
Yes, get them to clarify in writing if it's vague. And one more thing, check if that agreement has language limiting their financial liability, even if they do sign the 5500. Some do. This whole step is about mapping out your current administrative risk exposure.
Makes sense. Okay, action number two.
Identify your investment fiduciary role. Again, talk to your plan administrator or record keeper. Ask, do we have an investment advisor formally attached to this plan? If yes, find out. Are they acting as a 321 or a 338?
And why is that distinction so important again?
Because it determines your level of responsibility for investment oversight. Remember, if you have a 321, you're a co-fiduciary. You're still on the hook for making sure funds are prudent, costs are reasonable, performance is monitored, changes are made.
But with a 338.
With a 338, that investment management responsibility and the associated liability gets transferred to them. If you don't have any advisor or you only have a 321, then you, the employer, bear either the full or at least a shared duty for investment oversight.
And even if you do have a 338?
The report still suggests it's prudent to check their fees and the specific services they're providing. Make sure you're getting value.
Okay. Action one, map admin risk. Action two, map investment risk. What's action number three?
Get a plan analysis. The report argues this is really the most effective way to pull everything together and see the whole picture.
How does that work? Can you do it yourself?
Well, some basic plan information is public, actually. Things like the fund lineup, reported fees, maybe even some performance data. Attorneys sometimes use this public data to look for red flags.
But for a real deep dive.
You need more. You'll need your plan's adoption agreement, that's the document outlining the specific rules of your plan, or the summary plan description, SPD, which summarizes it for employees. And critically, you need the 408B2 fee disclosure.
The 408B. Remind me what that is.
That's the document from your providers that's supposed to clearly lay out all the compensation they receive, direct and indirect, for the services they provide to the plan. It lists out all the costs. It's absolutely essential for benchmarking fees properly. You should be able to get these documents from your current record keeper or TPA.
What can a thorough analysis using these documents actually uncover?
A lot, according to the report. A detailed fee analysis, breaking down every single cost component, record keeping, admin, advisory, fund expenses, and benchmarking them against comparable plans. It can identify lower cost alternatives.
Wow.
An investment analysis, looking at the quality of the funds, their expense ratios, their performance against relevant benchmarks, identifying any persistent underperformers that should maybe be replaced. Then, overall plan benchmarking, how do your total fees and service levels stack up against plans of a similar size and complexity? And finally, it should provide recommended corrective actions for any administrative red flags or compliance issues it finds.
That sounds incredibly valuable. Does the report give an example?
It does. A really powerful one, actually. A case study of a company they analyzed recently. This company had about $8 million invested in their 401k plan.
Okay, $8 million. What did they find?
Well, first, the fees were significant. They were paying about $20,000 a year just to their record keeper. housekeeper, and another $30,000 a year to their 321 investment advisor. Plus, there were other hidden fees inside the mutual funds themselves.
$50K right off the top, plus fund fees. And who was signing the $5,500?
That was the kicker. Even though they had hired a 316 provider for some administrative tasks, someone at the company was still signing the Form 5500, meaning the company retained the full administrative fiduciary duty and liability.
So even if the 316 missed something?
The company was technically in breach because their signature was on the line attesting to its accuracy, and apparently there were some basic administrative filing mistakes that had been missed.
Ouch. What about the investments with the 321 advisor?
Remember, with the 321, the company is still the co-fiduciary responsible for the fund lineup. The analysis found the mutual funds they offered had an average expense ratio of about 0.50%, but comparable, readily available alternatives existed around 0.20%.
Okay, that's a big difference in cost. What about performance?
Also an issue. The plan's average five-year performance was around 8.00%, but the benchmark or alternative funds were closer to 9.30% over that same period.
Okay, wait. Let me do the math here. 0.30% higher fees plus about 1.30% lower performance.
Exactly. The report calculated that hidden cost, the drag on returns from excess fees and underperformance, at roughly 1.60% per year.
1.6% on $8 million. That's what, $128,000 a year?
Over $128,000 per year potentially being lost by the employees in that plan due to these issues. Issues the company, as the signing fiduciary and the 321 co-fiduciary, was ultimately responsible for.
That is staggering. And were the other fees reasonable?
The analysis also flagged that $20,000 record-keeping fee as being excessive compared to market rates for a plan that size. And think about it. They were paying $30,000 a year to a 321 advisor who either wasn't identifying these issues or wasn't proactively pushing to fix them.
Maybe because as a 321, they couldn't just unilaterally make the fund changes anyway. They needed employer approval.
Precisely. It highlights that not all fiduciaries are created equal, and the structure really matters. So in this case, having a 316 and a 321 just wasn't enough protection.
They still held the liability, and it was costing their employees dearly. What was the report's bottom line on this example plan?
The conclusion was pretty stark. This plan was described as basically being a prime candidate for litigation, and they estimated a potential settlement range, if sued, could easily be $500,000 or more, based on the documented losses.
$500,000. Wow. Okay, so after painting that grim picture, what's the solution the report proposes? How do you avoid becoming that example case?
The core proposal is to strategically outsource your fiduciary duty and the day-to-day management. The report suggests doing this according to DOL guidance by hiring qualified third-party fiduciaries.
Specifically mentioning those roles we discussed.
Yes, specifically engaging a 402A listed trustee who also tucks on the 316 administrative duties and hiring a 338 investment manager for the investment.
And the goal of doing that is?
The stated aim is to transfer essentially 99% of that day-to-day operational responsibility off your plate and, more importantly, eliminate 100% of the administrative and investment fiduciary duty and liability from you, the employer. The new fiduciaries take it on.
Okay, so how does that actually work? Do you have to switch everything?
Not necessarily. The report lays out two basic options. Option one is keep all your current providers if you like them, your record keeper, your payroll integration, whatever. You simply bring in these new 402A, 316, and 338 fiduciaries to take over the responsibility.
So they overlay the existing structure.
Kind of. They become the ones legally responsible. They start signing the Form 5500. They review everything, make necessary corrections, maybe automate some processes, ensure all the tasks are actually getting done right. And the 338 adjusts the investment funds as needed.
And the cost for this new layer.
Interestingly, the report suggests the fee for these fiduciary services might even be covered, or partially covered, by the cost savings they uncover in the plan analysis, like finding excessive fees or improving fund performance.
Okay, that's option one. Keep providers, add fiduciaries. What's option two?
Option two is transfer the fiduciary duty, and based on the analysis, maybe you do decide to replace some of your current providers if they're found to be significantly underperforming, overcharging, or just not a good fit anymore.
So you have flexibility.
Exactly. The key takeaway is that you're not necessarily forced into a wholesale change of everything if that's not what you want or need.
And the report mentioned an offer related to this.
Yes, they offer to do that complementary plan analysis we discussed earlier. Based on your plan, documents the 408B2 and adoption agreement SPD. They state the only cost is your time to gather and provide the information.
No obligation.
No obligation. And you get a detailed report back that outlines their findings, which you can then use however you see fit, whether you engage them further or take it elsewhere.
Okay, so if we kind of pull back and look at the whole picture presented in this report, it's quite a contrast, isn't it?
It really is. On one hand, you have the stark reality of that automatic fiduciary status you get just by offering a plan, the very real potential for personal liability, especially highlighted by that Form 5500 signature.
Plus the rising tide of litigation, which is increasingly targeting businesses of all sizes, not just the giants, and all those common pitfalls, fees, performance, admin errors that can lead to breaches.
But then, on the other hand, the report presents a path towards, well, simplicity, toward potentially significant cost savings, both for the company and, more importantly, for the employees' retirement outcomes.
And crucially, the ability to transfer that heavy administrative and investment fiduciary duty and the personal liability that comes with it to professional fiduciaries who specialize in this.
The practical steps laid out seem pretty clear.
Yeah. Those three actions. Find out who your current fiduciaries really are, admin and investment. Confirm who signs your Form 5500 and truly understand the liability of the carries. And then get a thorough, independent analysis of your plan.
And for that analysis, the key documents mentioned were the 408B2 fee disclosure and either the adoption agreement or the summary plan description.
Right. The report provides contact info. You can email those documents to 401k at ocarvestfg.com. That's 401k at ocarvestfg.com.
And they mentioned that should trigger an automated response with a link to schedule a time to actually review the findings once the analysis is done, which they say typically takes about 24 to 48 hours.
There's also a phone number, if you prefer, 346-666-6845. That's 346-666-6845.
Taking action, as this report really argues, seems to be the only way to truly get your arms around your current risks and explore the options for potentially offloading that liability and improving the plan overall.
So let's leave our listeners with a final thought, drawing from this report, something to really chew on.
How about this? Considering everything we've discussed about fiduciary responsibility and personal exposure, what does that signature, maybe your signature on your company's Form 5500, truly mean for your personal financial well-being?
Or maybe flip it. Think about the details buried in your company's 401k plan right now, the fees, the fund performance. Given the potential for hidden costs and drag we saw in that example, how much could those unseen issues potentially be diminishing your employees' chance at a secure retirement year after year? 2 second pause. Advisory services and pension consulting services are provided through Oak Harvest Investment Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Insurance services are provided through Oak Harvest Insurance Services, LLC, a licensed insurance agency. Oak Harvest does not provide legal or tax advice. The information herein is general and educational in nature and should not be considered legal or tax advice. Tax laws and regulations are complex and subject to change, which can materially impact results. Consult an attorney or tax professional regarding your specific legal or tax situation. Oak Harvest Investment Services, LLC, is not affiliated with Admin 316.